It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You've said countless times throughout your career that you don't enter a golf tournament unless you think that you can win it. Mm-hmm. So the question is simple. Do you think you can win the Masters this week?
I do.
Ooh, he does. Happy Thursday. Welcome into First Take. I'm Victoria Arlen filling in for Molly alongside Jordan Cornette. Shea will be joining us soon. He's be filling in for Stephen A. And shall we do this, Jordan?
I mean, if Tiger doesn't get you fired up to do this, I don't know what does.
I don't know either.
You don't have a heartbeat.
I don't know. Yeah, no. We're counting down until Tiger Woods tees off of the 2022 Masters in Augusta. And we do have news, though, that due to thunderstorms, all the times have been pushed back by 30 minutes or so. But Tiger is expected to tee off at 11:04 this morning. His odds to win the Masters have shortened from 50-1 down to 40-1 since speaking to the media Tuesday. Tiger could tie Jack Nicklaus Sunday with his record 6th Masters win. And for more, we are going to welcome in one of the best, live from Augusta, Michael Collins. I can't believe I'm saying this because we are in New York and it's kind of expected to be cold and rainy, but Georgia, not so much. So I hope you're staying warm and dry down there, Michael.
I am right now. Thank you very much. But I'll be the first to admit it, just like y'all saw in that intro and the way both of y'all talked when you came on the air by saying, if you don't get hyped up hearing Tiger say that, nothing's going to get you hyped up. And I'll be the first person to admit, I have the greatest job in the history of the universe because I get to hang out here at Augusta and watch Tiger Woods play golf, which we didn't think was going to happen. But I can tell you this about the weather. Those thunderstorms that came through started last night, and it was bad through almost 5:30 this morning. Estimated just outside of an inch and a half of rain fell, and there were some big winds, and it was just very bad. So this golf course, everyone talks about the greens here. They have this thing called sub-air underneath the greens that sucks all the moisture out of the greens. That'll dry the greens out pretty well. Now, when it's humid outside, the greens stay soft, which is what we're going to have today. But what they don't have sub-air on is the fairways, and that means it's going to be tough walking for everyone. This course is going to play long. The temperature is dropping just a little bit, but it's still in the 70s. So even though it looks kind of meh outside, the temperature is actually kind of pleasant.
Now, you know, the temperature isn't necessarily warm, as you said, but Tiger doesn't, he has historically said he does not like to play in cold weather under normal circumstances. And the weather, obviously, like you just mentioned, is far from ideal. How do you see this affecting Tiger?
Yeah, today it's going to be all about how that leg holds up for 18 holes walking on a soft fairway. And for people who've never walked on a golf course before, when it gets real wet on the golf course, think about going to the beach after it rains. You know how that wet sand is and your legs just feel heavy and tired if you're out there walking around a lot? Yeah, that's what it's going to be like for walking today. What you're talking about with the temperature and with Tiger's back, that's going to start happening tomorrow. The temperature is supposed to significantly drop. We're going to be in the mid-70s today, but tomorrow we're only going to get up into the mid-60s. And on Saturday, the low is going to be around 40 degrees in the morning. Sunday will be even colder. So it's going to be really cold starting out the day, especially going through warm-ups. And that's what Tiger's talked about. When it comes to temperature, if it gets really cold, it's really hard for his back to start loosening up and get good enough to play golf. So then that becomes the worry on Friday and Saturday for Tiger.
Michael, check it out. I just watched St. Peter's get to an Elite Eight. I just watched my Cincinnati Bengals get to the Super Bowl. Tiger Woods is Superman, and I believe when he says something, I'm going to go ahead now, as outrageous as it may seem, I believe he can get it done. What are realistic expectations? We hear Tiger say, I'm going out here to win this thing, but what should we as fans temper our expectation to? The cut, just out there seeing him play golf is the win. How should we approach this as fans?
It's all a win. It's all a win for us. And let's be honest, man. If this wasn't Tiger Woods and it was someone else who said that, like, do you feel like you can win? Yeah. We'd all go, okay.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Yeah. Thanks, Rory. You can win. Mm-hmm. Okay. Whatever. Coming back from an accident like that. But here's the thing. Tiger has made a career out of people doubting him and betting against him. He won the U.S. Open on a broken leg. I mean, for him to come back and win here in 2019. Now, even Tiger said, the fact that he's here, partly for him, that's a win. But if he's going to be here and compete, he's going to try and win. Is that really realistic? Think about it. How many of the players that are here are 100% healthy? Think about everything that other players had to do wrong in 2019 coming down the stretch on Sunday in order for Tiger to be in a position to win. Do I think that's going to happen again this year? No, I don't. Could it? Yes. Would I bet against Tiger? Hell no. I ain't betting against Tiger Woods. We all learned our lesson. But I think a top 20 for Tiger Woods, the way he's hitting the golf ball, that if his stamina in that leg can hold up, that's a realistic expectation. So I think making the cut would be a win, and a top 20 would be a huge cherry on the icing of a cake that has already got a ton of icing on it for all of us.
I mean, betting against Tiger is never a good thing.
My bet shows it's on Tiger. I can show you right on my phone right now if we want to do it.
Now, Arnold Palmer said that, quote, success in golf is less on the strength of the body and more strength of mind and character. So, Michael, how would you describe Tiger's mindset going into his first major tournament in 17 months?
We all know that Tiger Woods is the mentally strongest player that has been on the PGA Tour probably of all time. I don't know any golfer who is more mentally tough than Tiger Woods, and I don't know any other golfer who's out here now or even in the past that would say they know someone who's more mentally tough than Tiger Woods. He's probably the only golfer who mind over matter actually worked for him. Most people it doesn't work for. The problem with that now is because that worked in the past, even Tiger knows at 46 years old, you really start have to listen to your body. He doesn't have a choice. You know, when his body decides it's not going to do something, his mind can't say, yes, we are, and the body will go, all right, just one more time. It doesn't work that way. So for Tiger Woods, I think now that he's older and understanding that his body can't do what it used to be able to do, as mentally strong as he is, he's also mentally smart enough to understand that if his body says, let's not do this today, he's gonna follow it. And trust me when I tell you, I would say this to him all the time. Listen, dude, I've never heard an athlete say that I came back way too late. Never. I've never heard that. There's a ton of athletes say, I came back too soon. And for Tiger too, I tell him, look, the longer sometimes you stay away, that's the longer we get to see you. And what that means is if you stay away and get 100% healthy, then that means we don't have to worry about nagging injuries later and we get to see you play a lot longer. And that's what we all want.
MC, anybody asks about you and the job you do, they say MC's a vibe. So I feel like you're the perfect person to ask about the vibe there in Augusta. Look, it's Augusta. It's always going to have a buzz, but it's different when Tiger's there and he's announced himself to be out here playing. Describe to me what it's going down like out there in Augusta.
It's as simple as this. I got here on Sunday, and then Tiger put the tweet out that he was coming on Sunday to play a practice nine, and the whole vibe changed. Everybody's excited when you come to the Masters. Like you said, it's the Masters. So it's like, man, this is going to be fun. It's Masters week. We're going to have a great time. Tiger coming. And I'll tell you this. I have never seen as many patrons, the crowd as big, as I did on Monday, for a Monday. Like, for a Monday, I've never seen that many people out. It was like a Saturday at a golf tournament. It was a madhouse. It was crazy. And the vibe is this. Most of the people walking around here who recognize, they'll come up and say, yo, caddy, Mike, Tiger, is he playing? What do you think? I don't even get the answer. Is Tiger playing? He playing. Yeah, I know he's playing. He gonna play. He gotta play. I'm here. Can you believe it? We're all gonna see Tiger. Like, everyone was excited. And then when you saw him on the driving range, looking at how other players, how their facial expression changed when they walked up to him to say, hey, you know, give him that bro hug, and then how Tiger's expression changed. Like, that vibe is throughout this whole property.
Now, I mean, I think we were like that, too, when we found out that Tiger's, we were like, wait, he's back, he's coming, he's coming. Now, you kind of alluded to the players' reactions to Tiger coming back. How does having Tiger in the mix impact the other golfers in the field?
Well, everybody wants to play against Tiger Woods, too. Mm-hmm. That's the other thing. I mean, now back in the day when Tiger was in his prime, he wasn't friends with a lot of guys out there because he was trying to beat them. Like, that was the Tiger intimidation factor. You wouldn't see him hanging out in the locker room. You wouldn't see him eating in the lunchroom. He didn't have, you know, a crew that he was hanging out with because he was, I want everybody to be afraid of me, and I want them to know that I'm the best one out here, and I want everybody to think when I show up that you're playing for second place. And there was that vibe. when he was out there back in the day. But it's not like that now. Guys are friendly with Tiger, you know, and he's friendly with them. Now, he's not giving them all kinds of secrets and information. He saves that just for Justin Thomas. But that being said, guys are, like, friendly with him and yet still go, yeah, we're friends, but are you 100%? Because I kind of want to see your best against my best, and let's see what happens. So that's the thing. Every guy out here is so happy it's Tiger here because you know that in the annals of history, you're going to be able to look back and look at a leaderboard from 2022 in 2050 and be able to tell your kids and grandkids, hey, look, here go granddad's name right there. See where Tiger's name is? Oh, granddad's above him.
That's fair, Michael. Look, we talked about Tiger's impact with the rest of the field. Let's quickly talk about the rest of the field. Who do you predict is going to take home that green jacket? I mean, I look at Brooks Koepka. He's very dangerous. John Rahm, a lot of people are talking about. Who would you throw out there as other names to follow? Because it's not just Tiger and Augusta.
No, and, you know, everybody's been trying to thumb me down onto one pick. And I keep telling everybody, look, I know the media hates to hear this because, you know, most people say, I don't care who wins as long as they win on Sunday and it's over on Sunday. I think there's going to be a playoff, and I think the playoff is going to be between Brooks Koepka and Cameron Smith. Yeah, I said it. So, whatever.
He said it.
More
what a note yeah, to so end here's, it on.
And I'll tell you why. Let me tell you why Cameron Smith. This he'd be the first person in history to win the Players' Championship and the Masters in the same year. But you got to remember what the weather was like at the Players' Championship when he won. And that's exactly what the weather is supposed to turn into here. So you got a guy who played at a place who's got super slick greens and that you got to hit crazy good second golf shots out there and put yourself in position. Cam did that. Now he's coming here and he's going to have the exact same weather. Like it's going to get cold and crazy windy. And Cam's thinking, well, this is exactly what I did at the Players' Championship. And we ain't seen him since then. So he's like, I already did this once. I can do it again. Now Brooks Koepka, he's got a chip on his shoulder. This is probably the first time Brooks Koepka is getting to play Augusta National 100% healthy. And, oh, yeah, that friend of me, remember Dustin Johnson? Him and they used to be tight. They're not even friends no more. Yeah, guess who got a green jacket before Brooks? You think he's a little upset? I'd say yes.
Yeah. DJ's another one, though, as you casually mentioned it, Michael, to watch out for. I like DJ's odds to be in contention come Sunday as well.
I mean, what a note. What a note.
I'm not as hot as DJ as I am Brooks and Cam, though. Nah, okay.
I mean, Cam's a value pick. I love that, Cam. I'm going to lock that one in, too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to lock down. A lot to think about. Michael, enjoy Augusta. Thank you for joining us.
Anytime. Time to go get some more egg salad sandwiches.
Ooh.
Jealous.
Jealous. Oh, well, speaking of that, let's move on to the NBA, shall we? With the championship hopes at the beginning of the season, then a dramatic plot twist. The Los Angeles Lakers are done. Tuesday's 121-110 loss to the Phoenix Suns, combined with a 116-97 win by the San Antonio Spurs over the Denver Nuggets, officially eliminated the Lakers from playing contention with three games remaining in the regular season. Here's Steph Curry reacting to a very interesting comment from LeBron.
You hear what your boy said?
Who, my boy?
Take a listen.
Who else you want to play with?
In today's game, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Steph Curry's the one that I want to play with.
Oh, shoot.
The chef. You know what? Hey, he might want to play with you next weekend now.
That is phenomenal. When did he say that? Was that on the shop?
Yeah.
I guess the latest one, like, yeah. Okay. No.
Well, we got his wish, so he's the captain. He's picked me the last two All-Star games, so I don't know if that suffices, but I'm good right now.
How's that make you feel, though?
Good right now. I mean, whenever you get the interest or curiosity of what it would be like to play with arguably, you know, MVP kind of caliber dude like he is and one greatest of all time, cool. Like, it's amazing.
Right.
We all can live in that fantasy world, though.
Cool. That's all we have to say is cool. Yeah, well, we've got more friends to the table. We got Shea Cornett and Jay Williams joining us now. And, guys, this would be a very interesting situation to see this come to life, where Steph would say, well, we all could live in a fantasy world. His reaction kind of speaks for itself towards the end, but did you like?
V, I got to be honest. And Jay, I've gone back and forth on this one. I really don't want to hear LeBron tell me who else he wants to play with. Look, I know you want to play with your son. It'd be a great story. I know you might want to play with Steph. That would be a great story. But let's deal with reality, because I want to hear my legends tell me how they're going to fix the current bowl of ish that they're currently sitting in, because that's the reality of it. And yes, LeBron had a hand in this to a degree. Look, he's not necessarily Pelinka. He's not Jeannie Buss. He's not the front office, but he has some sway. And we heard Magic step up here, and Magic told us, you can go ahead and look. I can talk to you.
Well, I didn't know if you were talking to me.
I'm sure I get some FaceTime, but I'll come to you, Jay.
Okay, thank you. I would like for you to come here.
Okay. You want to do this a little two-man game right here. So to me, what it comes down to is I've got LeBron telling me all the things he wants to happen. Reality is he played a role in what currently happened. Does it tarnish his legacy the past year that's happened? Absolutely not. But could it tarnish his legacy if he doesn't figure out a way to get out of this next season? Then yes. And getting out of it does not involve leaving, joining forces with somebody somewhere else.
Yeah.
Figure this thing out. We just opened a show talking about Tiger Woods coming off a car accident, almost lost his life, almost lost his leg. He's out here saying, I'm going to come win the Masters. Those are the kind of legends I like to hear from. Mm-hmm. You count them out, they're going to come back, they're going to get something done. I want LeBron to tell me, hey, we're going to figure out how to unlock Russ. We're going to figure out how to keep AD healthy. We're going to figure out some savvy low-level moves to bring in some other guys that can be impact two-way perimeter players. We're going to figure this thing out. That's what I want to hear. Not the reality world with him and Steph. I don't want to hear that stuff.
Well, in LeBron's defense, he has said that he's going to figure it out. He's talked about it throughout most of the season towards the end. And I think he is a byproduct right now of a media trap, okay?
He's so controlling that media
He's controlling
trap.
It. But he was asked a specific question. So the original question was, hey, out of all these legends, who would you like to play with? He talked about Scottie. He talked about Penny Hardaway, people that he idolized growing up. And then the question pivoted. Somebody said, well, in today's game, who would you like to play with? So he answered it. Like, what's wrong with answering a question about it? I think the problem that we're starting to have with LeBron is that when you hear LeBron answer a question like that, we know how he is a mastermind at playing chess. So you automatically go to the place of, is he setting this up for the next move? But I have to defend him for a second because he's just answering the question honestly.
But what is that next move then? And why are we thinking about a next move?
That's a different conversation.
He's
not saying that Steph is part of the next move. He's just answering the question about, if you're asking him who would like to play with, he's saying Steph.
It's not coincidental that this comes out the day after the Lakers are eliminated from the postseason because LeBron James controls this entire narrative. He's the one that produces, this is his production company. It's his show in the shop. And so while, yes, maybe this was just throwing something against the wall, to me, and I know there were a lot of other people listed in there. I think Luca, Wendy was telling us earlier, was listed in there as well. That's fine. But now, of course, we're all going to jump on it because A, it's LeBron James, and B, he controlled this narrative. And in terms of what this means for the NBA going forward, like, I partially agree with Jordan. While I do like to watch greatness, I don't think it's even good for the NBA to have these kinds of discussions. This is why we all fell in love with Giannis.
But it's not a discussion. We're making a discussion.
We are
so when is a good time to have like this come out in the shop? Is it a week from now? Because whenever it would have came out,
around the All-Star
game, we would have put it together and we would have made it into this conversation.
I'm just saying, as you strategically float these things, and again, he said this a long time ago. It came out just now. But I think it also needs to be maybe watered down with some thoughts of, hey, he can step up there and he can float some other things about how he wants to fix what's going on there. Inevitably, Frank Vogel's going to lose his job. That's all we've heard here. Mm-hmm. And when Woj says it, it's gospel to me. So I then want to hear LeBron say something about who he'd want to be in that position to take that job. Start to float things that are going to fix the current position you're in. I don't have any issue with him saying this stuff. I just also want to hear him talk about, hey, how are we going to unlock Russ? Hey, what are we going to do? Because these three players, him, AD, and Russ, they're playing together next
year. So let's play the hypothetical game.
Let's do it.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So first off, Steph wouldn't leave Golden State. He's under contract. He's proven that he wants to stay there. So he wouldn't be coming to L.A. We're playing a hypothetical game. You're telling me LeBron James would leave L.A. to Golden State. So I go back to when Kevin Durant left OKC to then go to the Golden State Warriors, he got demolished.
Mm-hmm. I had no issue with that.
He got criticized out the yin-yang, all this stuff. If LeBron James were to leave the Lakers to go to Golden State to play with Steph, a guy that beat him in the NBA Finals multiple times, I feel like that kind of vitriol would be exponentially worse than Kevin Durant.
And I guess I go back to this.
So I don't think it would ever happen.
I'm glad you threw out the disclaimer. This is just fodder. He was just asked this question. None of us truly believe he's going to go to Golden State and play with Steph. If LeBron was watching right now, I'd be like, this is crazy that you're talking about that. But what is a reality is LeBron could end up leaving L.A. at some point. And I would have issue with that. Look, player empowerment, guys should go wherever they want. If people leave networks or leave different jobs, we don't judge them for that. They're doing what's best for their family, their best mental health, and what they believe is the best opportunity. But to me, with LeBron, didn't have issue with him leaving Cleveland first go round. Young kid, needed to get out, needed to see something else. Didn't have issue when he left Miami. Won a title there, got his education. Didn't have an issue when he went back to Cleveland and left Cleveland. Delivered them a title. But now you're at one of the most storied franchises sitting there playing basketball. You've delivered a title, done your job. But you're around greatness. You have a chance to surpass Kareem as the all-time leading scorer in a Lakers uniform. You want to solidify yourself as the greatest Laker ever? Win another title. And maybe it's recency bias. Maybe it's because I'm sitting here watching Tiger Woods doing what he's doing, being resilient, coming back here with that dog. I want to see LeBron say, it wasn't right last year. This is not my career. I play in the playoffs. Not only do I play, I go to the finals and I win hardware. I want to see him come back and prove this is a one-off. This is a minor stain this past season, but it will not be the story. I'm winning again in L.A., and I want to see how I can figure it out because it's not laid out for him to do it, quite honestly, with how it's constructed.
Shay, here's my problem with this. Why do we act like LeBron James is not that person?
Because he hasn't been vocal about it at all.
But the dude has played. You know how many games LeBron James has played in March in his career? You're telling me in an era in which players take rests, guys don't play, this dude at 37 years old is still playing games down the stretch.
It's incredible.
And people were saying, well, it's because he's going for the scoring title. He's dropping 40 or 50 to stay in the play-in race.
But they didn't get to the playoffs.
I understand that because the structure of their team is horrible. It's horrible. Russell Westbrook is another version of LeBron, just not at the same level. They don't have the shooters. They don't have the three.
Who had a hand in it?
I agree.
Who co-signed some.
Okay, so that's still a 33% chance that they had winning the title in 3 years. I think any realistic GM will say, yeah, this year was a crash and burn situation, but damn, I would take a title one out of every 3 years.
It didn't have to be this, though, and we don't know to what degree LeBron had a hand in it, but we sat here and watched.
You're being a Monday morning quarterback. A lot of teams.
We sat here and watched Magic say, you could have DeMar DeRozan. You could have Buddy Hield. You could have kept Caruso. Yeah. So if LeBron had a hand in that, then isn't it also on LeBron to say, I can't leave this thing as is?
So here's my thing. If you would have had DeMar DeRozan, if we're digging into the trenches of how the CBA works, that's a sign and trade, they wouldn't have had the cap room to go out and then get a Buddy Hield. I hear what Magic's saying. But, like, actually reality.
So if they had a DeMar and a Caruso on this team, take away a Buddy Hield.
I think it would be different.
You think?
I'm a firm believer of saying I think with DeMar DeRozan or a Buddy Hield and keeping Caruso would have been a difference. I know that LeBron made the wrong bet. But I'm still asking you guys to put it in its entire totality. About one out of 3 years, you win a championship. Like, that is, I'm a Chicago Bull fan. You're a Chicago Bull fan. When's the last time they won a championship?
Don't do that to me. Don't do that. So, let's not do that.
But you're taking it. These two things can be agreed upon. You can still say, job well done. You won a title 2 years ago. You can also say, you can't turn around the next season and not make the playoffs. And bigger than that, Jay, it's because of how he performed. This wasn't LeBron not getting it done. This is peak. Maybe not peak LeBron, but special LeBron. It still feels like prime LeBron with the numbers he's putting up.
With AD playing 39 games this year, 36 games the year before.
Hold up, though.
And I understand that.
When you had LeBron and when you had AD and when you had Westbrook on the floor together this year, when those three were whole, they were still getting outscored by the opponents. So it's not like you can simply say, bring AD back and this thing works.
Oh, I would have never said that. I mean, I think this team, structure-wise, defensively, is one of the worst defensive teams we've seen. They're old.
Because of what they let go.
It's worse than the Magic this year in terms of defense. When they won a chip, they were either 1 through 3 in defense efficiency of the year and the year before they won that championship. They need to figure out their defense.
Which is why it's unfair to Frank Vogel. But what it comes down to is contracts could not be moved with the three pieces there. You're never going to move LeBron. You might have wanted to move AD. You're not going to get what you want from him.
Yeah.
Russ is collecting that $47 million. So who's the person that has to take the fall? It's the guy who built that defense. It's the guy who's won a championship as a head coach. Frank Vogel can go somewhere and win. Unfortunately, he has to be the lame duck in his position. It's not fair. It's just the only way, right?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you hope for the Lakers a setback is just a setup for a greater comeback. And you hope that Frank Vogel goes somewhere where he can have a little bit more momentum. But let's move from the West Coast to the East Coast, shall we? In a city that never sleeps, the Brooklyn Nets came back in epic fashion from a 21-point deficit to seal a 110-98 victory Wednesday night against the New York Knicks. And that win put the Nets one game back off the Cavs for the seventh in the East. And they play each other in a big matchup tomorrow night. So here is KD on that Knicks-Nets rivalry.
Yeah, I just seen it. We 7-0 since I've been here. Oh, you're talking about, Damn, that. How, is, when I was at the Thunder?
Yeah.
What year was that?
13.
I got something to talk about on Twitter now.
He's got something to talk about on Twitter. Now, with that big win, the Nets have a lot of momentum going in the right direction. So, what defines that postseason success for them, Shay?
Well, postseason success is a little different than what's right in front of them, because front of them, they need to win their next two games in order to lock up the seventh seed, and that is for certain. And their game against the Cavs tomorrow night is a big one. So that's first and foremost. In terms of what's going to happen in the postseason, it's obviously getting to a quote-unquote regular playoff. Therefore, they have to win a postseason series, which would be in the play-in. And to me, that would be the most success that the Nets can have at this point. We've seen these holes, and we saw it in the first half yesterday against the Knicks, where they were absolutely horrendous, including Kevin Durant, who I tend to think is the best player in the NBA right now. Yeah. If you go into halftime having 0 rebounds and 9 points, and that's what you're putting on the floor as your best 1-2 punch in him and Kyrie, that scares me heading into the postseason. I have no idea what this Nets team is going to be when they're faced with actual challenges, and not a Knicks team that really looked like they weren't even trying for half of that game. But here's what I do know in terms of trying to spin this positive, because I like to sometimes be the one that's a little more glass half full.
I respect it.
The Nets at this point are 8-4 in one possession games. They're getting better. If you look down the East, which is a crowded East, especially at the top, Miami is 3-6 in such games, Boston 3-9, Philly 6-6. Again, in terms of one possession games, the Nets are the gold standard. Yep. And so if they can continue to keep games close and then pull away at the end, it's not the scoring that we're questioning, it's going to be the defense. And then I hate to say this because I know this is going to open a lot of debate, but that's what we're here for. If you get Ben Simmons to at least have a little bit of an effect on the defense, perhaps then you could win more than just a series. What did I tell you?
The worm, the can of worms has been opened.
I've never seen you and Jay argue, so I actually don't get along.
No, argue. Oh, boy.
I want to see this.
Can I start with you first, Victoria? Okay, sure. Oh, boy, no. What did I do?
She's just asking a question.
I know, but you stated the question. As this is Kevin Durant on his rivalry with the Knicks. That's laughable.
I know.
A rivalry means both sides have to win games.
I was trying.
Hey, she likes the Packers-Bears rivalry, so maybe it doesn't matter.
I like the New York storyline.
To the New York Knicks was in 2013. When he was with OKC?
There's no rivalry there.
I wish Stephen A. were here today, because he's supposed to give me a nice little $6,000 Tom Ford suit. When I tell you, because he had the Knicks going to the Eastern Conference.
But he called it a rivalry after the game. He did call it a rivalry after the game.
Hold on. We also can't. So, we got to give Stephen A. some love, too, here. That man did say they're down 67 points to the Knicks in that first half. We know what the Knicks are going to do.
Yeah.
And the Knicks certainly did in the second half. So we got to give some love.
I'll give him love on the back end after.
Jake,
New York, stand up. New York, we here. We here. Stand up. Oh, I wish he were here. Yeah. So that's one. I just had to address you.
Do you want me to leave? Is that
No. We're actually on the same page.
Wow.
Okay, I can't wait.
Okay, we're on like.
So I know expectation is always championship or bust for Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But here's why they get a pass this year. And let's just be realistic about it. We don't know what the hell is going on with Ben Simmons.
No.
Lord knows we want to know what's going on with Ben Simmons in his back, because I believe if he were actually on the floor, if he came in with a reasonable time frame between when the Nets are playing and the playoffs started, I would have said that would have been enough time for this guy to find his chemistry with this team, understanding what their defensive identity is, and I think he brings a different dynamic to this team. Then I would have said, you know what, it's championship. Me realistically watching this team defend, when I watched the Houston Rockets, I was at the game sitting courtside, when Kevin Porter and Jalen Green go for 30-plus, I'm sitting there saying, "What? Wow, this is where this team is. When I can drag Andre Drummond on the ball screen, I can score against Andre Drummond, and I feel like I got one leg out there." So my thing is not having Joe Harris on the floor, a guy who defensively is part of the backbone of this team. Like, that hurts this team. Not having Ben Simmons hurts this team, right? So I still think they're prolific. They're lethal scorers that can take you in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But realistically, them getting through the play-in tournament and matchup-wise, if they're playing against the Milwaukee Bucks and the Milwaukee Bucks get number one seed, like, I don't expect them to beat the Milwaukee Bucks. Like, I don't know if I would expect them to beat the Boston Celtics. If they got the Philadelphia 76ers, I could potentially see that a matchup that they could win, just knowing the history there of how that would bring the best out of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But knowing Doc Rivers, Doc don't want to see the Brooklyn Nets.
No.
So I don't see the Philadelphia 76ers going for the number one seed to see this team. So my thing is, if they win a playoff series, I think that is a successful year to a degree.
Stop it.
That's realistic.
A successful season when you thought at the beginning of the year it was going to be Harden, Kyrie, and KD.
But see, that's my thing.
But
when you thought it was going to be.
But that's part of
it. But that's not where they are.
You're adjusting what reasonable expectation is now. And to see how far that expectation has come to where they are currently, you'd have to call it a failure. And I'll do you one better. I'm glad I had a chance to sit here and listen to you two kind of go back and forth and ultimately come harmoniously here, because I didn't believe this until this very moment. I wouldn't play Ben Simmons at all. I wouldn't show him at all in this postseason, because it's stacked against him. And it's stacked against the Nets in this postseason. And so, yes, KD is 34 years old. It's clearly win now, especially when they made the move you did. But is it win now because you made the move you did? You're set up to be good for a few years here in Brooklyn. What do we know about Ben Simmons right now? That he's not in the best mental health space.
Mm-hmm.
And also, we now know that his back might be a little bit jacked up, too. Mm. He's not deemed the savior for this squad, but he kind of is. Because with KD and Kyrie, two first-ballot Hall of Famers that can light it up offensively, but they're lacking a defensive component. It's a belief that all of a sudden Ben Simmons shows up defensively, they're going to go on a run. Not quite. Hasn't played in a year. Conditioning in question, mental health in question, and his headspace can what we saw him last time on the floor. And, oh, by the way, can his body hold up? In the postseason, mind you. Mm-hmm. So, to me, I think keep this a clean runway. Just shelve him off. See what KD and Kyrie can provide. Maybe some fireworks. Maybe Shea's right. But don't do it with Ben Simmons.
So
it's too late now in the game to throw this guy in a pressure situation like that. How do you feel about Ben Simmons and pressure?
Oh, I don't like it. And all that sounds great. But I'm sorry. What were your expectations for the Nets? Like, how far did you expect them to go? Because I didn't hear an answer.
At the beginning of the year, title.
Well, obviously at the beginning.
What are we talking
about? It's April right now.
But that still has measurement in where we are.
And what is your measurement?
Now, there's no way that – if they get through the play-in.
So what's your expectation?
I'm telling you, if they get through the play-in, great. You know who they might see? The two-seeded Celtics. Do you know what Jason Tatum did to this Nets defense?
Actually, we'll give him a shot against the Celtics. Not having Robert Williams.
54 against
not having the time load really helps.
Okay.
It really helps. It really helps New York.
You never know with Robert Williams when he could return in that series, for one. We don't know. But, yes, you're right. All I know is what Brown and Tatum can do to that defense, that perimeter defense, is going to be ugly.
So what you're saying is at the end of the day –
they don't make it through a seven-game
series. You agree with Shea and I. That's what you're saying.
That you think
confused.
They went one.
But how I look at that ultimately in the grand scheme
is a
of
failure.
Things, how that season looks is a failure.
Yeah. So with KD having a knee injury, being out for a while. By the way.
Come on. Injuries happen everywhere,
but these all play into it.
Hold on. They were number one in the East when KD went down.
True.
With Kyrie playing part-time because of the vaccine. Then James Harden decides that he doesn't want to be there anymore, checks out. They're forced to make a trade. I understand that as athletes, we're always going to look at either you win a championship or bust, because that will always be my mentality. And I see that for KD and Kyrie. But realistically, when you put this season into perspective, you can't realistically call it a failure because of all the things that they were dealing with. If you're saying all these guys were playing and it wasn't Kyrie with the pandemic and that Ben Simmons was there and they're all together, fine. If they have injuries in that aspect, fine. But that's not been the case this whole year.
Ja Morant, injury. Memphis goes 21-3. You can overcome injury if you're constructed properly. Second part, part-time player.
But defensive-minded team.
Part-time
defensive
player.
Pieces.
Kyrie Irving made this decision. Respect his decision. Everybody has their own right. But you're laying out domino things that have happened, which prove expectation beginning of the season, where they are is reality here. Oh, yeah. And that is a steep decline, which leads to it's a failure of a season, given how you started it.
Okay.
Well, how you start, how you end can drastically change, as we saw with the Lakers as well. But we got to take a break, so we're going to leave on a harmonious note, shall we? We all agree with
nothing about this show that's harmonious.
Okay, well, we're going to try to be harmonious, shall we? Okay.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/firsttake. That's amazon.com/firsttake to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's lectricebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Starting this Monday, First Take's Draft Blitz kicks off as we dissect and debate key teams leading up to this year's NFL Draft in Las Vegas. Monday, First Take will spotlight Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Now, Josh Allen will be with his partner in crime for years to come as the Buffalo Bills have reached agreement with wide receiver Stephon Diggs on a four-year, $104 million extension that includes $70 million guaranteed, sources have told our very own Adam Schefter. So, with more on that, we are going to welcome in NFL analyst Sam Acho to the squad. Now, Sam, you've got your Masters green jacket on, so we respect it, appreciate it. And, Sam, I'm going to start with you. Is Josh Allen the QB under the most pressure next season?
No, he's not. I don't think he's the number one QB under the most pressure. I think that title would go to Tom Brady, and here's why. I believe that pressure, in a lot of ways, is a function of time, right? How much time do you have left with the opportunities that are afforded to you? Tom Brady's 44 years old, and he retired last year as the league leader in passing yards. This dude retired on top. It doesn't happen. Drew Brees retired, didn't look great in his last year. We saw Peyton Manning retire, didn't look great in his last little spat of his seasons. But Tom Brady retired on top. And then 40 days later, he came back. And if anybody knows Tom Brady, the dude with seven championships, Tom Brady didn't come back to be average. He didn't come back to lose. He's coming back to win. And so for me, the person who's under the most pressure in a lot of ways is TB12 because of the expectations, number one, but more importantly, the function of time. He does not have as much time left as some of these other younger QBs.
The thing with that, though, for me, Sam, like, I agree with you. There's going to be pressure on Tom Brady, but it's on himself. Like, he's got to feel like he's going out on top, which he would have done if he left and stayed gone. It's not from the outside because he already has so many rings and has already brought a chip to Tampa Bay. And obviously, we know what he did in New England. For me, this has got to be about Aaron Rodgers, and it's not even close. And look, the Packers have one Super Bowl ring. That's all great. And then they moved on from their head coach, and we have yet to see Green Bay come up since then. And they've had to make moves because of what Aaron Rodgers has done during the offseason. They had to get rid of Devontae Adams because that is what he wanted, and it feels like a lot of that decision was because it was predicated on what Rodgers did. Look, this is a fan base that I know really well. My family lives in Wisconsin. I go there very often. They're big Packers fans. This is a fan base that's extremely frustrated with their quarterback and the drama that they've had to ride over the last two seasons. If this guy doesn't come back and they don't go take a wide receiver in the draft that can immediately make an impact on this team and have them put up points, it's a complete failure in Green Bay, if you ask me. If you look at Aaron Rodgers' record in the postseason, he's 11-10. Okay, great. Four of those losses have been in overtime. And three of those losses have come without one offensive touchdown. That's a problem. And so Aaron Rodgers needs to figure out not only how to win a Super Bowl there in Green Bay this year, but also right the ship for all the drama that's gone on and also make Lambeau Field now be a place where they win in the postseason, something they haven't done the last few years.
She's trying to act like she's the only one that goes to Wisconsin to see her father and that side of the family. I go too. Shout out Rip in Wisconsin. And cheese curds are sorious.
You're so good.
Let's go back to who really has the most pressure on him. Who's America's team? Who's the quarterback of America's team? Those Dallas Cowboys. Who does Stephen A. love to pile up on every Monday morning after they have a letdown? It's the Dallas Cowboys. So Dak Prescott is most clearly the guy with the most pressure on him. $160 million contract. Every year we have the same question. Is this guy one of the best? Should he be paid that type of money? Pressure, it's all over Dallas. Amari Cooper leaves. Now with CeeDee Lamb is the number one. Pressure there. Mike McCarthy steps in, some issues managing a clock, some other managerial decisions, coaching decisions off to the side there. A group that goes 12-5 and is usurped in the first round by an upstart San Fran squad that goes on a run and almost to a Super Bowl. Look, Dak Prescott has been there for a lot of years now at this point. What Dak Prescott has not been able to do is find consistency. You can even question health now coming off what happened two seasons ago. But how about the playoffs? My man's 1-3 in the playoffs. The quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, one of the most storied franchises in all of, not football, sport. So Dak Prescott better deliver this year because, yes, good season last year. Yes, good statistics last year. But it didn't end up being anything in the postseason but a bounce job in a wild card game. This group better figure it out, these Dallas Cowboys.
Go ahead, Tim.
But Jordan, whose fault was that? You just said it was Mike McCarthy's fault. You just said it was the coach's fault. Dak Prescott had the number one offense in the NFL, number one. So that's great for
him.
How
did he do in that postseason game?
Hold on, real quick. Because it wasn't his fault they lost. Ask anybody. They're not saying, oh, Dak Prescott is the reason we lost. A lot of people are saying it's coaching error, right? Coaching, in math, people say statistical error. Coaching error, number one. Number two, the defense, right? This is to the point of will they be good again and go on again. Their defense is going to get better. Dan Quinn had head coaching job opportunities that he either turned down or whatever reason he didn't go to. And now he's coming back year two in this defense, reinvigorated. Michael Parsons, Trayvon Diggs, et cetera, et cetera. So the defense will be better. So I think the Cowboys will be better. The issues with the Cowboys wasn't with Dak Prescott and their number one offense. The issues was with coaching. So if anything, if you talk about the Dallas Cowboys specifically, Mike McCarthy has more pressure in that organization than anybody, number one. Number two, to the Packers example, Shay, and I respect that, right? I respect where you're coming from in the fact that Aaron Rodgers is 11-10 in the playoffs, hasn't
but
looked good.
What, Sam, hasn't won, but hasn't, what? Where's the but?
You know me too well. I believe you are a bit biased because of the Chicago connection. Ooh. You want to see him. I'm just saying, right? Shay, you and I go back, right? We go back, boom, boom. I played with the Bears. I get it. I'm wearing green, right? So, like, Packer, whatever. But I think that Aaron Rodgers did what Aaron Rodgers wanted to do. Number one, he got himself paid. $150 million guaranteed for 3 years. $50 million a year. Right? That's more than any other quarterback per year. Then he got his best friend paid. He got his homie paid. Devontae Adams went to Las Vegas and got paid, the highest paid receiver, at least at that time. And so if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm chilling. I'm like, dude, I got paid. I got myself paid. Yeah, legacy, I got my Super Bowl. Maybe I'll win another one. Maybe I won't. But a lot of the blame, and I get it, a lot of people in Green Bay, they're looking at the quarterback and saying, are we going to go through these issues again with COVID, with vaccine, with whatever? And I get that, and that's a real thing. But if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm low-key like, hey, man, look how much money I have in my bank account. Look at what I did for my team. Like, our plan, our whole last dance thing, that worked out to perfection. Obviously, we didn't win a Super Bowl, but it worked out because I got mine and you got yours, and we're going to ride off in the sunset. So that's why I don't believe that. Either Dak Prescott or...
So that doesn't determine success, though, and that doesn't not create pressure. So what you got paid, the last dance thing absolutely didn't work out because they didn't show up when it mattered most in the postseason. Yes, Aaron Rodgers got what he wanted, but that's what's creating the pressure because inevitably it's causing a rift between not only what's going on with the Packers, but all of the fan base. And while Tom Brady and Dak Prescott, to me, have a different kind of pressure. Dak Prescott because of the team he plays for. Tom Brady because he walked away and came back, and how can he finish on top? Aaron Rodgers is for the entire Packers organization. They need to win this year. It's win or we're going to continue to be disgruntled. All this drama for what? And you want to call me biased? That's fine. You can call me biased. Well, I don't care. I think Aaron Rodgers, and I appreciate his greatness when he's been great, hasn't amounted to anything since early in his career.
The Last Dance, Sam, we all know how The Last Dance ended. What are you talking about? This is The Last Dance. You know what? Those guys got paid and they won a chip. That's how The Last Dance ended. Yeah. What are we talking about?
All three of these dudes need to find a way to win a championship, and it's for different reasons. Yeah. But to me, the most pressure sure resides in Green Bay.
Yeah. And are you saying you don't think Aaron's going to win again, Sam?
Well, not even that. What I'm saying is, like, what do you want him to do? Right? He's got back-to-back MVPs. Only five other people in the history of the NFL. He's the fifth person to do that. Five MVPs. The reason they lost, you might say it wasn't a great offensive output against San Fran. But there was a punt that was blocked. Their special teams coordinator got fired. It's a new special teams coordinator that's in Green Bay right now. Even before this season, a lot of the conversation, though I don't believe this is true, a lot of the conversation was, man, they should have kept the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands, right? It seems like it's always someone else's fault. That's what the storyline has been, right? He has three more years on his contract. And so, yes, he has an opportunity to change that storyline, but I don't believe, at least in comparison to like what Tom Brady, what he's done and what he's trying to achieve, and even Dak Prescott and being America's team, I don't believe that Aaron Rodgers has that much pressure. He's got back-to-back MVPs. He's like, I've done my job. Y'all traded our best receiver, so y'all figure it out. Y'all, as a Packers organization, y'all are the ones that are making us look bad. I'm winning.
Yeah, but they couldn't afford that receiver because of Rodgers.
Yeah, no, I think we're all in agreement here, but I think we don't have the time to keep going on and on about Rodgers. So I think we obviously have to take a break.
I'll just say really quickly, only one of them doesn't have a championship. Only one of those guys hasn't won a Super Bowl, and that's Dak Prescott in that conversation.
Yeah.
That's a differentiator that applies.
He's also the youngest.
But that applies pressure as well. They've never done it.
And Tom Brady's the oldest.
A massive amount of pressure. Sam, thank you for joining us.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.